Just to clarify, this show is now called White to See Radio. It used to be called R3 with JH, and then it was Half-Pastor Presents R3 with JH. I didn't like those names, so I went back to White to See Radio, which was the name of my original podcast back from 09 with my wife, which then became Half-Pastor Adventures. So that show is no longer White to See Radio, but the show is now White to See Radio. You're going to hear me call it R3 with JH, you're going to hear me call it Half-Pastor Presents R3, but really the show is White to See Radio, and you're going to hear this intro for a long time because I record like 35 episodes. Enjoy.
John, you're a dork.
In true fashion of our reveal, not a reveal, what a play of an R3 episode, which is now part of Haphazard, I'm in the car and happen to just see a cop flip a bitch on the freeway and get behind me and put his lights on, not pull me over. I get out of the way. The car in front of me is in the carpool lane, and they just sit there, and the cops behind them flashing their lights and shit, and they just don't get over. So it's like, what? And they just ride him. The cop's like, come on, motherfucker, get over. And yeah, they probably thought they were being pulled over, and they just got out of the way, and the cop just zoomed past him. So note to yourself and everybody out there that if a cop's behind you and they have the lights on, pull over, get the fuck out of their way, let them on their business. They might not actually be after you. So hi, I'm John. This is an R3 episode. This is Casey and the Ines, or Casey and Ines, recorded back during the first book's Kickstarter with Casey Allen, who's the editor of the Ines Anthology. It's just him and I talking about our plans for the book and why he came on board and why he's excited for it. And it was a lot of fun. Might be old news now. I mean, you've probably heard us talk about it 1,000 times with other podcasts we've done. But I figure since I'm bringing all the R3 episodes over onto Haphazard, I might as well bring this one too. So here's myself and Casey Allen talking about the Ines Anthology. Recording now. Yay. We did it.
Awesome.
So this will work because usually this is going to be for my new show R3, which I usually record while driving, but this time you're driving, so it works.
Yeah. I'm driving through downtown Birmingham right now. So
yeah, you Alabama person.
Yes.
Not sure what that means, but you know. So thanks for joining me. Those listening to this little show thing, this is Casey. Casey has been instrumental in bringing the Ines Anthology to life, really, to getting it out of where it was sitting stagnant for a while and bringing it, you know, to where it's getting actually published. So thank you, Casey.
It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed myself.
So I have some questions for you, if you don't mind.
Shoot, what you got, man?
So first, why did you join me? Why did you want to punish yourself with all this work?
The idea you sold me on the idea right away. It sounded like a fun exercise in writing. And when you told me how you were having all of these people contribute and you were so passionate about wanting to get it off the ground, I really wanted to help make that happen. I run a website called The Comic Jam.
That's kind of how we met. It's their Instagram with that.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of people that want to get into comics or want to learn how to do their thing in an environment where people, A, won't be assholes to them, and B, they can kind of meet people in the same frame of mind where they want to succeed at this thing. And so there's nothing that I enjoy more than seeing somebody find something that clicks.
Yeah.
And helping them to make that happen.
Yeah, and a lot of this book, a lot of what you've been doing on this book has basically been logistics and getting a lot of the background stuff that I just didn't either have time for and didn't know how to figure out or didn't want to do kind of done and moved forward with a lot of little meaningless stuff, like, not meaningless, a lot of little menial stuff, like, you know, building the pages on the website, getting the contract signed, getting X information from this person, but also things like making sure the stories fit together, helping with the order of the stories, writing your own story for the book, helping with mapping out how characters are going to get developed throughout stories and how we're going to tie it all together between book to book. It's been a, you know, bringing you on for me, it has been one, you're a great sounding board for this project. And two, it's been a way for me to kind of say, hey, this needs to be done. I don't want to do it. Do you mind doing it?
I really enjoy the process and I'm learning a lot as I go. One thing that's really fun for me is in the story aspect of things is we have so many just disparate stories in this collection, and helping to find a common thread in those stories, which is already kind of there. We're talking about the same family.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Finding a way to link those together to where it all kind of gels has been really, it's been a really fun exercise.
I think so too.
Also just seeing all the different creators we have on this project. Holy crap, man. We have so much talent on this book. And right? To be involved in that, you know, as their peer is, I feel like a dumb hick that, you know, has no idea what he's doing, but at the same time, it's kind of gratifying. So it's like, I do kind of belong around these guys. I can hang.
Yeah. I mean, you can, like you've brought so much to the table since, I mean, you know, I did this project on my own with, you know, when I say on my own, I mean the editorial side on my own, running the project for like a year.
So much done.
And yeah, but since you've come on, we've gotten so much more done in the last 6 months than I got done in the first year and a half, you know.
I'm so stoked on this project.
Yeah, it's great. Now, I have a question for you for the first book. Now, we have, as people may know or may not know, you and I have, you know, enough stories and stuff planned out. And book two is actually already almost halfway done right now. So
we're going to hit you guys hard.
We are.
In 2019.
Now, for book one, do you have a favorite story?
Favorite story?
And you can't pick yours.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I'm an idiot.
Your story is great. Shut up, right?
my favorite story, book one, thinking about it, there's so many that really connected to me.
Yeah.
Some days right away that it's just such a good origin story. And the art is fucking beautiful. Can I say that?
You can say fucking, yeah. And Rick does the art on that one. Rick Bugbee is such an untapped talent.
And just a solid dude.
Yeah.
I've dealt with a lot of people who have a lot of ego.
Yeah.
And Rick is in a position with his art where he could have... No, the Rick, biggest head about...
He should have a big ego because how good his art is. That's how good he is.
Yeah. Every door frame in his home should be widened by at least about 2 feet by the size of the head that man should have.
Right.
But
right.
He's just such a good guy. And he's been very, very locked in with the project and on board. He's just ready to rock and roll.
Well, I mean, he's the only person in the book besides you and me that has worked on more than one story at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And going on, though, the Black Hand.
Oh.
That yeah. story kills me. I love war history.
Now, remember only the first half is in this book, so don't give out any kind of spoilers for the second half.
Oh, yeah. I gotta zip it. But my initial major in college was history. I wanted to be a history major. I wanted to teach history.
Oh, I wanted to teach it. My goal in high school was to be a high school history teacher.
Yeah. And then like looking back at my sad sack of a history teacher, I'm like, why would I want to be that guy? But he really opened up my imagination.
Yeah.
And made me want to read more about stuff. And World War One history especially has always interested me.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people really pay as much attention to it and know about it as much as they should.
No, because it gets overshadowed by World War II all the time, because it was so close to that one.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, there's so much going on and so much just complete and total destruction. It's insane.
It's a turning point in modern warfare where they started with new machines and new ways of killing started coming into play.
Yeah, and just a little tidbit. During the Battle of the Bulge, there were more unexploded shells during right. that battle than were ever fired during World War II.
Oh, Jesus.
Which is knucking futs, man. That's insane.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And the Black Hand, just for people listening, it's written by Travis Webb, penciled by Greg Warrenchak, inked by me, and colored, as of right now, by an unknown. We haven't quite locked down the color as it's recording.
And right now, just to the inks and everything, that art is, I love that art style.
Oh, yeah. Greg did a fantastic job penciling that one out.
The juxtaposition between the art style and the story that it's portraying, it just makes it all the more sinister.
Yeah, that was on purpose when I chose Greg to draw that story. Because as people may not know, like, this anthology, we did not function like a normal book, right? We did not say, you know, you and you go create a story. We did it, we got scripts first, and then we as the editors paired up scripts with artists we thought we could draw those scripts. So like, it's weird because the writer really didn't have a choice in who drew their script in this book. And that was kind of by design, because I think that kind of gives the book a little bit of an edge, because then we have a third, you know, the editors, you and me, kind of looking at the scripts and saying, okay, this script should be drawn in this style because of how the tone is going to fit, whatever. And then allowed us to take a script like The Black Hand and have it drawn by someone like Greg Warrenchak, who has a very clean, very, you know, I don't want to, not quite Archie, but Archie's type style, you know, very clean, very cartoony, but very realistic all at the same time, and tell this gruesome World War I story, but have it work because the two things come together so well.
It made me think of Tintin.
Oh, yeah.
The way
his
characters were drawn.
It's definitely Tintin, right? Like,
yeah, I really, right away, as soon as I saw that art, I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. And I immediately saw the Doughboy costume, uniforms rather. So
yeah, nice. Yeah, that one was cool because Travis, the guy who wrote that, he's a professional writer. He's worked in a bunch of stuff before, and when he submitted his script, not only did he submit the script to me, which was, you know, 16 pages, he also submitted a supplementary file, kind of like what you do in your scripts, where you write a script, you paste images into it of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Except for he went one step further and created an entire file full of pictures and descriptions and history of everything in the story. Here's the suits. Like, he did all the research for Greg. Like, here's the suits, here's the guns, here's everything for this time period, like, super detailed out. It was pretty.
That's awesome. And
what's funny is Greg was like, I kind of know all this stuff already, but this is good.
The story that I'm working on right now is set during the Reconstruction, and I feel like such an asshole because I'm sending all this stuff to my friend Alex Zapata. He's a great artist. Look him up on Instagram. He's really big into American history and stuff too, but I have to go back and look just kind of not to be a jerk, send him, like, this is what those uniforms look like. This is what the original peacemaker looked like. You know,
right. As an artist myself, working with scripts, I don't see that as insulting. I see that as in, you have a particular style you want, and this is your idea. And it's good to let your artist know what your idea is, you know, because, you know, sometimes you give people full freedom when they're drawing pages. Sometimes, like, okay, it's important to the story that you match this, you know. Or something.
Yeah, close
to this. I mean, it's fine. You're fine. I don't think he thinks you're an ass. You're fine. I think you're an ass. I don't think he is.
But you have good reason to, probably.
I mean, I'm sure, but you also have the same reason you think I'm an ass too, because I fucking ask you to do so much shit all the time. Like, hey, do this. You're in your family life. You're good. Do this.
I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it, man. I've been having a blast.
Yeah, me too, man. It's been amazing. Yeah, you know, you picked two great stories. Well, one of them you picked was the one that I wrote, which was, I mean, thank you. But The Black Hand is a great one. I think my favorite stories in the book, it's a toss-up for me between two. And it's a toss-up between either The Cross Path by Joseph S. Pell.
And the art in that, it will blow you guys away. I can't wait for you guys to see that.
Yeah, Daniel Biano knocked it out of the park with the negative space in that one. It's amazing. So much so that we're not coloring it.
Yeah. And I'm glad you kind of got the same idea.
Yeah.
On that, because it's fantastic. And those inks just look.
Yeah. He did such a good job. I don't want to ruin it with colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I love that one because it's such a great, like, without even trying, Joe was able to basically do a kind of a world setup in one story without even thinking that's what he was doing. And it was great.
Yeah.
Because he took the notes that I gave him beforehand and wrote an amazing story. And the other one that's kind of like up there for me, and it's only because it's such a dark and demented story, is The Wanderer by Michael Tanner and art by Clayton
Holyfield.
Yeah.
Really, yeah, he killed it on that art.
He's killing it on the art, and Michael Tanner wrote the most screwed up story that I think we'll ever publish in this series.
Yeah, as a dad, it was kind of hard for me to read. But when you deal in horror, when you deal in stories like this, if it doesn't make you cringe a little bit, if it doesn't, you know, punch that nerve, then yeah, what are you reading a horror book for? What are you hoping to get out of it?
And one of the things we said when we started this book was that not all Ainz are good and not all monsters are bad. And this one definitely proves the first point.
Yes. Yes.
Because and it's and what's great is when Michael was writing that story, he asked me, he goes, I have an idea, but it's a bit dark. And I'm like, let me hear it. And he told me his idea, and he's like, is that too much? I'm like, no, go for it. It'll work. And you know, I sent it over to Clayton, and Clay has a comic series called Sandwin. It's really funny. It's about a chef who, I'll just say it's about a chef. Look it up. It's he uses chef. I mean, it's funny. It's great. But I met him at a con in Portland. It was kind of funny because a couple years ago, I had a table, he had a table, and we were across the hall from each other, or across the aisle from each other. And all of a sudden, he gets up and comes over to me and goes, hey, I follow you on Instagram. And I'm like, you do? And I looked him up and I'm like, hey, I follow you on Instagram. And then we became friends after that. And when I approached him and said, hey, I'd love to have you do some art in this book. And I said, I have a really, you know, effed up story for you. And he goes, let me see it. He read it and he goes, oh, that's messed up. I love it. I want to do it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. If you potential, you know, funder on Kickstarter.
Yes.
If you guys want this book, but do not want to be disturbed, don't want something that's going to creep you out a little bit or make you feel kind of icky, go to the grocery store and buy a fucking issue of Highlights. They have great puzzles and you can sit around the kitchen table with your kids and what's wrong with this picture? Right. Why does what doesn't match in this picture? You'll have a great time.
Yeah.
You don't want the Ainz book, but if you want something that's gonna be entertaining to read, might creep you out a little bit, might make you feel a little icky, but at the end of the day has, you know, a great thread of a story going through it and great 10 great stories, then fucking buy this book. You will not regret it.
And even if you fall on the first path where you don't want that stuff, still buy the book, just don't read it.
Yeah, give it to somebody who's cool and not a douchebag.
Hey, just because they don't like creeps doesn't make them a douchebag. It just makes them not cool. There's a difference.
Okay, right. Got you. Right. Sorry.
No, but seriously, if anything we've said on this episode sounds at all remotely exciting to you or cool to you, you know, go to Kickstarter, look up Ainz Anthology. When you're listening to this, it's active right now. You can go to ainzanthology.com, EYNES. There'll be links in the show notes below to click on both those things to go straight to them. We've put a lot of late nights into this. There's been lots of nights recently where I'm up until 1-2 in the morning working on stories
or
working
on stuff
or edits in our, we have a OneNote that's very robust right now.
I'm a central time zone. I wake up every morning at 4 and the first thing I do is check my phone and I will see, you know, 30 edits by John at, you know, just 2 hours ago. So
yeah. Well, you know, I'm kind of insane in the fact that I have something in my head to do. I'm like, nope, I gotta do it now. I sent you the illustration piece for the first for the actual first page of the book last night. And what time? That was like what, midnight, 1 o'clock my time? Because
I was already passed yeah. out. Yeah.
I had the idea of how to finish that piece, and I was like, I got to do it now. And then I went through it, and it what's funny about that piece, and you'll see it, that piece is actually going to be in the Kickstarter. So if you go to Kickstarter, look for page one, you'll see what I'm talking about. But that piece where, because the whole idea is it's an illustration with words on it. It came out completely different than my original thought, right? Because my original thought was to have it very clean lined, very clean comic book style, then colored in actual comic book style. How it came out was like a painting.
Yeah, it looks very painterly. I dig it. Another story that, if we're going to talk about stories.
Sure, go ahead.
One thing that I really enjoyed and has been really a blast to see the art come along is the Something Borrowed.
Oh, yeah.
By T.S. Black.
Written by T.S. Black, art by Dennis Tirona.
Dennis Tirona, yeah. That is, that's looking pretty popping. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that story is it's a sleeper hit, right? It's not a fast paced story, like the written wise. It's not fast paced. It's not like action, 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 action. But it's one that you start reading and you just keep reading and you keep reading, like, and it keeps building and building and building. And the art does the same thing.
Yeah, it's a slow burn, but it's the ending is pretty amazing.
And what's cool about that one is T.S. is from Nigeria, and Dennis,
I have no idea.
Yeah, and he is from the Philippines.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
The story is done by, you know, different around. I mean, this book is worldwide, right? That's all I'm saying.
yeah, we're all over the place. So, it's been really amazing seeing the different styles of writing and art. And as a writer, I'm so generally involved with my own style of writing and how I tackle a page. Just seeing the other guys' scripts and how they go about doing it has been really interesting. And so that part, you know, the editing side has been pretty fun to see how our different creators go about things.
Yeah, and as I said in other podcasts, I've interviewed and talked about this book recently in this whole month, when I drop your name, I say you're the co-editor of the book, but I also clarify, he's really more of a producer. You're really more of a, if this was a TV show or a movie, you'd be a producer on the show. You wouldn't be an editor, because what you're doing is more producer level stuff of keeping things in line, keeping tasks in line, and all that kind of stuff, as well as
keeping you from doing
too much.
A 12th podcast.
Hey, I'm only doing three right now. Okay. Although I do kind of have two more in the back burner, but those are being delayed by other people, not me. So whatever, they don't want to do it. That's fine. No, they're busy.
They're doing the Lord's work right now.
Right, they're doing the Lord's work.
Slow down.
No, we're doing the Lord's work right now. This is the Lord's work. Right. The Aeon's Anthology is the Lord's work. Oh God, that sounds so bad to say that out loud.
just don't say that in Alabama.
right. Well, that's where you are.
You'll have some bellicose preachers chasing after you.
Right. It's funny because, you know, you're in Alabama and I'm in Washington State. Those two states could not be further from different. You know?
I really want you to experience Birmingham. It's
I've been to Alabama before.
It's
not in, Birmingham. Like,
there's Alabama and there's Birmingham and Huntsville. Huntsville has one of the most educated cities in the nation, and that's due to all the stuff and the rocket industry and all that.
Right.
Birmingham is, I mean, anytime you live in a city that has its own season of First 48, you might want to consider moving.
Oh, geez. It does, or doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, it can be interesting, but great arts community here, a great local music scene, and it's an interesting town to live in.
Oh, I bet. You know, it's kind of funny here. Let me make sure this is right before I say this out loud and look like an idiot. I'll edit out the silence because I have the power of editing.
I was about to say there's a few verbal pauses here and there you might need to tackle.
So I went up. I was going to say about. I was wrong. I have not been to Alabama because I'm an idiot. Back in 2000.
Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly. Back in 2004, I drove from Nashville to Washington State. Right. And we drove through Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico. Then went to Colorado and Utah. And we went all up the...
That's a drive, dude.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. But I pulled up the map real quick just to make sure I wasn't talking out of my ass, because apparently I was. And on the map, I put in Nashville to Seattle just to see how it routed us. Literally the only state that's not labeled on this map is Alabama.
Yeah, that's a hell of a drive, man. I've driven from Birmingham to Albuquerque.
Oh, geez.
And that was a gauntlet, but I can't imagine driving.
We took 2 weeks for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we drove from Nashville straight through to the panhandle of, not below the panhandle, but the top hat of Texas, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we drove straight through to there, which was 12 hours straight. And then we drove from there into New Mexico, up to Colorado, and then into Arizona. And then we drove to Las Vegas and stayed there for a couple of nights. And then we drove to Reno and stayed there for a couple of nights. And then we decided to go from Reno up through Klamath Falls and up to the mountains in the middle of winter to come home to Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was quite the trip. Crazy. It was pretty fun. Oh, and we did the whole trip on like $500 because we were broke. Okay, $500 outside of gas money, right? We had gas money covered, but we had $500 for food and incidentals for the entire trip, pretty much.
That's a lot of dollar menus.
Yeah, man. Well, that and we won like $102, $200 in Reno or something like that. So we had some extra money from Reno. Not much, but a little bit. But, well, Casey, I thank you for joining me today to talk about the Ions Anthology and kind of introduce you to the world of people who hear me chat and talk my voice all the time, because I talk a lot, apparently. You can check out Casey at the Comic Jam. Just look up the Comic Jam. I'll have a link down below for it. It's a really fun thing. I'm a member of it, although I'm not very active. I've done, I think, 2 things total.
And they've been great. Yeah. Yeah. We have people come in and out all the time. We have people that have their own projects, and
I just want to say that I wrote for the rap battle this week. I wrote the best rap battle of anybody, and it got half illustrated, and I was very sad it didn't go up.
Dude, I was so disappointed in that, because it was pretty awesome.
The rap battle was the best one ever. And then, even if it's not, it still is in my mind. But yeah, and you know, it was funny because the one that I think the only one I really completed fully was one that was like a robot one that I just drew and said, "Here, Casey, write words to this."
That was so awful. When I say it's awful, it was awful because the content, not the work that went into it.
It's pretty awful. I mean, it's a pretty dumbass joke, right? It's pretty stupid, right?
I had a blast writing it, though. It was so fun.
What's funny is, unlike most things I draw, I actually just drew that on a piece of like copy paper. I just grabbed a piece of printer paper and drew it. And,
oh,
and,
really?
Yeah. And then scanned it in and colored it and upscaled it to where the size it needed to be. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun. And then we did Marvel bullpen style for the dialogue. And it was great. Yep. It worked out great.
That's how I do a lot of my dialogue for the comics I know over the years, is I'll plot it out a little bit, and then I'll just kind of like draw the pages, and then I'll go back and write words to it.
It's a fun way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, man, I'll let you go. It sounds like you're not driving anymore and you have stuff to do. So have fun with that. And then when you get home, get your ass back to work on Ions Anthology.
I absolutely plan on it.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right, take it easy, buddy.
Later.